okay? So I'm just going to briefly introduce Dana Priya here. I invited Dana Priya to come and give a talk, and I said he on the precepts, and I kind of thought he'd go for Dana Priya, but anyway, he did. I asked him just if he wanted to do a talk, so he chose Dana. So Dana Priya and I coincided at the London Buddhist Centre a long time ago, in the 90s, wasn't it, actually? He was ordained in 2001. And then I don't know quite when it was, but it's a good 10 years ago then. You moved to Deal, which was it your home at one time?
No, I mean, I lived up that corner for a while.
Yeah.
My mum lived there.
So. I thought, yeah, your mum lived there, so there was a connection. And I had a connection with Deal, which some people know about as well. So I kind of thought, oh, Dana Priya's gone to Deal, that's interesting. Anyway, you started giving public talks, didn't you, and then doing classes in your flat, which then didn't grow like the McCurdy's house. So then you had to move. But you've been astoundingly successful in Deal, I think, all on your own for quite a long time, getting a really thriving sangha together. And I think that just kind of indicates your name, actually, doesn't it? You know, Dana Priya, he who delights in giving, generosity. So now there's riches. We're all kind of getting involved in Deal. It's about 9 order members with some sort of connection to Deal. So it is growing quite a lot. Anyway, I'm so glad he's come. Really delighted to listen to what you've got to say. So, Dana Priya.
Thank you. Hey. Yeah, so thank you, Diapachani. Lovely to be here with you all. Came to Croydon once, 13 years ago, so nice to be back. Okay, so yeah, so first of all, my name, as Diapan just said, means one who loves giving, so this precept is, right up my street. So I'm giving you a talk called Giving is Enjoyable. Giving is Enjoyable. Firstly, I'm just going to do a bit of an introduction, sort of just talking about the second precept. I think you had the first precept, didn't you do that a couple of weeks ago?
I did.
So it's the second one. I'm just going to talk a bit about the precept. And then I've got 10 points I want to make and go through in relation to generosity, to this precept. So the second precept, with open-handed generosity, I purify my body. Or I undertake to abstain from taking the not given. So it says with open-handed generosity. So it's sort of open-handed, no strings attached, or ropes, or it's sort of like, you know, we so often give, but when we start to look at our mind, we're expecting something back at some point. You know, you give something to somebody for their birthday, and then on your birthday, you haven't got anything. There's a little thread. Or it depends who it is, a big rope, you know. So it's sort of, it's quite a, you know, open-handed generosity. It's free of any expectation. It's quite something to attain. And so that's the ideal. And the opposite is not taking the not given. An interesting way of putting it, but it needs to be that way because it's sort of like we must not take what belongs to others, either by force or fraud. So in other words, we must not steal. But it's not as simple as that. It's not as simple as just not stealing in the obvious sense, because this precept also includes things like acquiring debts one is unable to pay, which is sort of quite rife in our society these days. People live beyond their means. They hope they can do it, but actually acquiring debts that one is able to pay is taking the not given. Borrowing things without asking. Being lent something and not giving it back. Not being mindful enough to give it back. You know, it's still on your bookshelf. This book you buy, you know, years ago. That sort of thing. That's taking the not given. It wasn't given, it was lent. Another interesting one, taking people's time and energy without asking. I've had somebody recontact me recently. I met this person pretty much when I was first in Deal about 10 years ago. I was not very well at that point, and I was going to healing things. I met this person, and I felt like they just talked at me about all their ailments, all their everything, and they went away, "Oh, lovely to see you, oh, I feel so much better." You know, I was on the floor, so I felt sucked dry of my energy. And okay, I chose, it was my responsibility, I chose to let that happen. But actually, and this person's recently found me again, and rang me, and obviously it's sort of definitely one way, he wanted something from me, and it's really hard to sort of say, actually I can't do this. I've already, like, they rang last weekend and I'd already happily given out tons that week, either to patients or classes or meeting up with one-to-one with people, and it was Sunday morning, and I just thought, actually I can't do this. So I said, decided not to give to that person and actually give to me. And it really was the best thing to do. But these things, and it was quite hard to say, actually, I can't do this. So it's quite a challenge, this priesthood, and how to give and where to give, But taking people's time and energy without asking. So it's like checking, when I sort of ring somebody and say, is this a good time? This precept pervades so much of our life. And then other areas of taking, not giving, sort of fiddling tax return or social security claims or taking things home from work, stationery or pencils or whatever, home from work. We sort of think, oh, it's sort of all right, but actually it's not, because all our actions have the effect on other people, on the world. But most of all, and most important, our actions have effect on us, on you. So what I do is I reap the karma from that. So that's a few things more about broadening out, taking the not given, sort of that end of the precept, and we've got open-handed generosity at this end, and we're sort of working somewhere in here, and some days be more up there, and some days it's sort of, all in the same day you can be all over doing different things. So in What is the Dharma, Bhante says giving is one of the basic virtues. Giving is one of the basic virtues. It is said that without a spirit of giving which finds its expression in practice, there is no spiritual life. So what does practice equal? So giving is such an important precept, because it's in relation to all the other precepts. So practice equals the giving of love and kindness, as in the first precept. The giving of a being that is still content and living a simple life. That's sort of giving to others in many ways, but as an exemplification. The giving of kindly, truthful, helpful, harmonious speech is a great gift. To master, and the giving of mindfulness, clarity, wisdom is in the fifth precept, sort of the key to awareness, therefore knowing what to give, when to give, how to give, when's the right time to give. So that's sort of an overview, an introduction to the precept, and now I'm going to touch on more than touch on some points that I want to just draw out as flavours of this of generosity. So the first one is, we are given to enormously. I would say, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands and millions of people help me live the rich life I live and the rich lives you live. I mean, in this country, it's so abundant. I mean, like this morning, I had porridge for breakfast with linseeds in and something else, sultanas. And, that was all grown somewhere and looked after and tended and, ploughed or whatever they did, and processed and, I don't know where it was made, but it's transport and putting bags in Sainsbury's, and it's just so many people involved with me being able to get my porridge, you know, and somehow somebody in Sakavati where I stayed last night, you know, they bought it and it's there in the jar, somebody put it in the jar, you know, so I could go there and take the porridge out. And you know, it's just the porridge, let alone the soy milk and the fridge that was in, and the building that I was in, and then who drove the two tube trains I got this morning, and then the train I got here, and you know, who built this building and the chair I'm sitting on. And you know, there's millions of people have given at some point, so I can be living in this realm I'm living in. And that, it's just vast, isn't it? You know, you just it's just how it is. And all those people, many of them I don't know. Many of them I don't know. But thank you. Thank you for giving. Thank you for enabling us to live in this abundance. Most of the time we don't even notice. Which is interesting. So this precept can really open up our riches in this world. Because millions of people are doing things for us, giving to us. So that's the first point, and I think it's really, if I only said that, I could go home now and be quite happy. Because if we just dwell on our lives as we go around in that way, who I walked on a pavement, didn't just happen. And those lights kept me safe when I was crossing the road. Well, I kept myself safe because I did it at the right time. So, point two. Title is Poverty Mentality and Low Self-Esteem or Self-Worth. I think and I feel that this self-view that often we have, to some degree, of a poverty mentality or low self-worth, self-esteem, is the most crippling to human life. I'm just going to read this, this is a speech that Nelson Mandela gave in 1994. He didn't write it, it's somebody else's words, but some of you may have heard it. But our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are born to make manifest our glory that is within us. It is not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give others permission to do the same. And as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So it's really important to connect with our inner abundance, our inner riches, and this will encourage the practice of giving. Because if we feel abundant and got a lot, we can give out. You know, it's like I'm walking along the seafront, you know, some mornings, and If I'm in a positive state and somebody's coming towards me, you know, I can say, oh, hi, good morning, you know, just carry on. It's like I can smile and do that. And but if I'm sort of feeling in on myself and down low, whatever, you know, I just sort of walk, looking down, probably hardly notice the person. Or if I do, I think, miserable person, didn't say hello. Mm-hmm. You know, or it's about how, it's our inner world, isn't it? It's how we feel. It's nothing to do with anybody else or anything else. So we need to let our inner riches live, and we all have them. They're nowhere else. You're stuffed full of them. It's just your choice whether you let your generosity live, whether you let your love live. how you act in the world. So what stops us giving? Well, there's resistances, lots of things in our history. We need to look at our inner world, look at our views. And do you feel you don't have enough, therefore can't give? Or do you feel abundant and giving is spontaneous? Yeah, greed comes from a perceived emptiness within. It's not true. It's sort of a perceived emptiness from a sense of lack. We think everything will be fine when we have such and such. You know, we think that whatever the thing is that we're desiring will fill the inner void. But guess what? It doesn't. We just go on to crave another shinier, newer something else. And it's like this human thing. We just keep craving and to sort of almost to try and make us all right. But it doesn't work. Well, we can sort of make it work for a bit. Can't we? We're quite clever in certain ways, but ultimately it doesn't. So this is an essential human problem. So the craving, the desire. And they're good energies, craving and desire. Where do we direct them? Do we direct them to places, to things that actually are going to, you know, make us feel happy and abundant and able to give to people and, well, create a happier life for ourselves first, and that's not selfish at all, because the happier and more abundant and full and lovely we're able to be with all of ourselves. You know, we've all got our stuff, but none of us have got away without having a difficult life, and that's, you know, that's absolutely perfect, because it's then what we do with it, isn't it? So where are we? Yeah. So generosity helps fill that inner emptiness with riches that shine. Yeah, or in fact resonates with our inner abundance that's there, has always been there. And actions of generosity remind us of our worth and our inner riches. So our work is to return to our pure state of abundance. And then greed dissolves. It can't be there. It can't live. We feel we have plenty to give. Unfortunately, yeah, due to past negative conditions, we often start from a place of inner poverty, which can stultify our flow of generosity. So we need to recognise that, get to know our resistance, our boundaries, our histories, turn it around. So we need to replace the tendency of feeling worthless, which is such a wrong view, because you're stuffed full of good qualities. Let them live. You know, you're not unusual. You've all got the abilities to develop love, confidence, you know, kindness. It's all there. It's just what stories we tell ourselves that limit us. And you can be unlimited. So our inner riches are vast and abundant. We need to see them, enjoy them, and bathe in them. Then, like in the Metta Bhavana we've just done, our riches can flow to ourselves, our friends, the neutral beings, and even to our enemies, until we are lighting up the atmosphere with absolute abundance. So it's moving from the inner poverty, inner self-worth, lack of self-worth, to inner riches. You can't but experience life's riches more. Let your inner riches shine. And then we feel abundant and we have more opportunities to give. So I think this is core in this precept, actually. It's about our relationship with ourself and our riches. So yes, the next one, I've got a word here, says relax. Oh dear, right. So this one's called Not About Material Wealth. Okay, oh, I've got another bit to read you. I'm sitting comfortably. So, here we are. This is Vajragupta. I wrote a book called Tools for Living Your Life. This is just a little bit from there. A friend of mine once went travelling in India with his girlfriend, who then became very ill. He tried to buy a train ticket to get her to a hospital in a city, but was told no tickets were available for many days. They were both anxious and frightened in a strange country where they didn't know who to trust. A young Muslim man befriended them and offered to help. Could they trust him? They decided to take the risk, and he spent many hours at the train station queuing for tickets and insisting they be allowed to travel soon. He eventually got the tickets, but wouldn't accept anything by way of thanks. He just saw two people in need and decided to give his time and help. You don't need to be rich to be generous. You need a generous heart, generous spirit, generous mind, and you can feel absolutely abundant, yet on a material level have very little. You can be mean-hearted, mean-spirited, mean-minded, yet on a material level have absolutely everything. Who is happier? Often the person with more has more to lose, more to hold on to, more stress, more anxiety. It actually doesn't matter what you have. It's to do with your inner world, your sense of self, the degree in which you acknowledge and live from your inner riches that we've just looked at. Because generosity makes us feel abundant of heart, spirit, and mind. So it's not about material wealth. So number four, talk about things that can be given, particularly in relation to that. So what can be given? Listening. I mean, really listening. When you're with a friend, and you can really be there and listen, or you can sort of be half there, or something happens over there and you're looking at them, or you're really with them, absorbing them, letting them share whatever they have. It's really important, and I think most of the time most people don't listen. A lot of time we're preparing what we want to say to boost ourselves or something. But true listening, and I'm sure we've all experienced it at times, is quite different. But we can give that gift of truly listening. Energy. We can give our energy in many ways. We've got loads of energy. And my experience is that energy isn't limited. If we give in the right ways, energy gives you more energy. It's interesting, at the end of the day I can sort of, oh, I'm tired, I just want to blob out on the sofa or whatever, oh God, I've got to leave Mitch study tonight, oh blimey. I go and do it and you engage, and actually at the end of the evening I just feel so good, and where did that come from, and I have a job to get to sleep. I'm so stimulated. It's like, and that can happen almost every week, but why do we forget? Anyway, but energy is not like we think it is, and we've got so much of it to give. Courage, we can give courage, encouragement, our time, patience, friendship. Friendship's an amazing thing to give. Humour, empathy, kindly words. It's almost endless. The list could be a lot longer than what I've got here. Touch. Just think of practical things. We've got practical skills or whatever. We can help each other out. Education. We've learned things that other people haven't. We can pass it on. We can give it. Example. Silence. Just being with people in silence. can be a real gift. You know, just there's obviously right moments and whatever, but silence can be such a gift to just be with someone. You know, beautiful silence. Company. A lot of lonely people out there. Company. A meal. Kindness. Rejoicing. Just saying a couple of nice words. Often people close to us, we don't say nice things to them that often. You know, to me it's like focusing. That's why, you know, in our movement I love some of the best things I've been part of is rejoicing in merits. When we rejoice in someone, I hope if you've not been in that environment where that happens, hopefully you will soon. It's wonderful. And that really helps. I know when I've been rejoiced in, it really helps my lack of self-worth. I can't quite hold on to my story anymore. Because these people say, you know, about different qualities that they see in me. And I know it's true because it resonates. If they're trying to batter me up, it didn't work, because you know that that's a load of tosh. But yeah, rejoicing. Interest. Being interested. I find as, you know, if I go about the world, some people who, you know, I want a connection to be somebody, I'm interested in them and they're interested in me. Sort of an equal, you know, you're sort of enthusiastic about each other's lives. But it's quite a lot, it only can work one way, you know. Sometimes people are not really interested, they're just interested in telling you what they want to tell you, you know. So being interested, it's really important to connect. And of course, material things that are needed. And things like care when your friend, family are unwell. Speaking of our friends and family and whoever well in their absence. You know, you hear maybe people saying things about somebody that you think, oh, that's not how I know them. And then standing up to them and saying, actually, they're this as well, you know, or that's not how I perceive it. So that takes courage, so we're giving courage. There's so many ways that this generosity can pervade our lives. Give honest feedback with kindness to our friends, because I know some of the most important communications I've had in my life to help me grow has been my friends who have been able to say to me, Dana Priya, when you did that, actually, you know, you could have done it better, or it created this negative response or whatever, and because it does resonate, I think, oh God, I've done that again or whatever, and I know they want the best for me, because it's not easy for us to say, you know, give that sort of gift, actually, to mirror our friend, our family. But what most people do is when it gets, oh, they're behaving like that, I don't want to go near it, and you just go the other direction, and you don't help them. Do you know what I mean? I mean, this resonates with, I'm sure it does, your experience. So yeah, and just doing things the way they like them done. You know, we might like it doing another way. Just choosing to say, well, I know they like it doing like that, so we'll do it their way, you know, instead of our own. Which is interesting. And then things like ringing people, not just texting, or send cards, even write a letter. How old-fashioned. But what's it like to receive a letter or a card? You know, it's a real gift, isn't it? There are so many things that you can give. Ideas. And, of course, money. You can give money. Or energy to fundraise for a good cause. Give of yourself in so many ways. The Buddha embodies altruism and generosity. He gave of himself for years and to his very last breath. And we have been given to by so many. Sorry, relax that one. You all awake?
Yes.
Okay. Number five. Little things go a long way. Little things go a long way. It's like I was talking about the walking along the seafront. You know, be smile and be the first to speak. You know, new people coming in here for the first time. You know, and you probably all remember, maybe not, but you remember going into places for the first time. You know, it's quite a thing walking through a door on your own, you know, often to a new thing. And sort of you're welcomed with a smile and you're just being the first somebody speaking to you. Oh, it's just so lovely. It's just, you think, oh, it's all right, it's going to be all right. Because everybody comes in with fear. We're all full of fear as well. But we can help people, you know, we can alleviate people of that. And it makes a huge difference. And things like a hand on people's knee or shoulder or at the right moment. You know, the one who gives it doesn't quite know what it does. But you know when that happens to you? Actually, I was just having breakfast in the kitchen in Scarborough this morning. Somebody just came, they came behind me and just put two hands on my shoulders. You know, it's just lovely. It's so simple, but I felt welcome and included and loved, you know. Opening a door, you know, just going out of Marks and Spencer's or whatever, you know, just open the door for other people, not being in such a rush, you know. A thought, just sparing a thought for a friend, somebody who's having a difficult time. Because I think, like in the Metta, I think thoughts far more powerful than we know. I think thought does affect. I've had so many things happen in my life that confirms that statement. I was a spiritualist before I was a Buddhist, so I had lots of things with strange sort of thought things going on, and I'm sure much more is going on. So a thought, I think, makes a huge difference. Even if it doesn't ever make a difference to anybody else, if I think a positive thought about somebody, it's made a difference to me. A flower. Just picking a flower out of the garden or, you know, giving it to somebody. A compliment. A warm welcome. Giving something little every day. Little things go a long way. And says bread belly. Remind myself to be here. Oh dear. Right. I'm quite moved actually. It's not unusual for me to cry in a talk. Okay, right, feeling the needs of another. That's number six, feeling the needs of another. This is really important if we're going to give well. So we need to put ourselves in another's shoes. Ethics are about going out of oneself, not being limited by one's present state of being. We can still give in whatever state we're in. Giving is a simple matter of feeling the needs of another as vividly as one feels one's own needs. And that bit's all from the Ten Pillars, Sangharacitta's book on the Ten Precepts. So being aware of another's needs enables us to give appropriately. You can sort of choose well what to give. There are many examples of the Buddha giving appropriately. He saw with the eye of wisdom, you know, and he knew what was needed. And it's a whole different level, isn't it? But, you know, he obviously knew. Sometimes it was discourse, sometimes it was silence, sometimes it was just looking after a sick monk, and so on. We sort of enter the feeling, resonate with the other person. Well, what would they like? What would they need? Not what do I think they should have. But also don't get hung up on our motives. Our motives are not going to be pure for a long time. And good intentions can be so squashed by our thoughts of why not to give, or why shouldn't they give, or what would they think, you know, or whatever. if we, you know, sort of put ourselves in their shoes and we really feel that, oh yeah, no, that'd be good, that'd be lovely, you know, they would enjoy that. And just do it, just give, just practice. It's a practice. We can get it wrong, you know, we're not perfect, you know, we're practicing. The precepts are training, practice. You know, we're often so hung up with getting it right, you know. So just do it, just give spontaneously. If you're aware, trust your guts. Trust your gut response, basically. And give quickly. It's so easy to have a wonderful thought and intention, and very quickly you can see it fading. You know, you had an or it's sort of, you've halved it, you know. Oh yeah, they need, oh yeah, I'll give them 100 quid, they need that, or whatever, you know. Oh, well, get away with 50. You know, whatever. I mean, that's just financial, but there's lots of ways you can watch it happen. So you give quickly, or good intentions dissolve. It's just how it is. So feeling the needs of another. Right, number 7, which is really significant, I think. Receiving generosity. No one receives, generosity is halted. Has to be a giver and a receiver. But so often you can witness, oh no, you know, that's all right. You know, what you're saying is, I'm not worthy of that. You know, it's like someone gives you a compliment, oh no, you know, it's such an automatic thing, and you see it all over the place. I mean, you may not do it yourself, but we need to receive. And we need to receive well. Whether we need it or not, that's immaterial. Receive well. We need to keep the flow of generosity going. Sort of appreciating the other person's efforts. Yeah, and if we're given gifts we don't need, receive it well. And give it to someone else. You know, it's yours. I've got a box at home. Quite a big box now. I put all things in I'm given that I don't need. I mean, amazingly enough, I don't eat chocolate, but I get so much chocolate in or whatever. And and then this box is full of lots of different things I've been given. And then when, you know, sort of somebody, you know, often giving things to people, I think, oh, have I got something in my box that they want, you know, and just recycle it, you know, it's just, it's fine. Often people think, oh, they shouldn't give because they gave it to me. Well, why not yours? You do, you know, and the more it's given, the more joy, you know, it comes. I mean, I might get the bar of chocolate back again. It's fine. It doesn't matter, does it? Receiving, receive well with gratitude and thanks. You know, just appreciating the other person's efforts. Keep the flow of generosity going. And you might notice that as you go around the world in the next while, you know, when you're given to, how you receive or not. Yes, so that's that one, receiving generosity. So we're home straight, got 3 more to go. This one's practice gratitude. Got this somewhere from Banti's, but it's a natural human response to feel gratitude. And real gratitude is only felt when you take from another what you genuinely need and what they are really willing to give. And so we really need to connect with this feeling, gratitude, just like the first one, you know, that we are given to enormously. Just having that gratitude of somebody made those candles, you know, the lighter or the matches, or to enable that to happen, and somebody crafted the Buddha, and, you know, it's just, oh yeah, wonderful, great, you know. Whoever's making our dinner out there at the minute, you know. it's all around us, the things to be grateful for. It's just opening to it. And it's mind, isn't it? Because mind leads everything. It's just remembering to be grateful, actually. You know, I mean, loads of what I'm talking about here, it resonates with you. You know it, isn't it? But we forget, or we don't actually focus in on it. So we need to connect with this feeling of gratitude, and it enables you to feel more abundant. you then feel you have something to give. Banti also says gratitude is a virtue that is rather neglected. Most because people can feel ashamed to feel or express gratitude. It's sort of a sense of being given something that we didn't deserve. If we feel something, if we receive something from someone, this can put us in what we feel is an inferior position. And we don't like to feel inferior, do we? This sort of difficulty we can have around gratitude. So, just sort of flagging that up, really. So, number 9, sharing. So creating a mind that is able to share. Sharing is important in this subject of generosity. So a mind likes mind that's sharing sort of breaks down separation, and we aren't as separate as we think. As in that first point, how could you live life without all those people doing what they're doing? We couldn't, not for very long. So we need to create a mind that is able to share. So a mind like this breaks down separation. It opens up space, which can break down greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed, hatred, and delusion, as we know, are the antithesis of generosity. They sort of keep the egocentric volitions going and keep us in painful states. So if I'm in one of these states, say ill will towards somebody, you know, I can reach out and give something. But recently I've been on holiday with 4 Buddhist friends in Spain, and I need to have a bit of a difficult conversation with one of them, and it was quite difficult. You know, it was held well, but you know, I think it was painful, but we needed to have it. You know, we knew also we needed to talk some more. I mean, we still got on well and still in harmony. I was aware at the end of the holiday, we were at the station going to the airport, and you know, I just said to him, I said, I'm really sorry we've had difficult communication on this holiday. And he just, oh, so am I, and gave me a hug, you know. And just that really broke a bit of the atmosphere. And I did feel like I got to build up some courage to do this. And I did it, and I'm glad I did it. You know, so it's sort of like, giving in that way when there's ill will around. So trying to reach beyond my normal thing of not wanting to go near it. So reach out, give communication, a gift, or a thought in the metta bhavana. Because even not needing to have the communication, we can sort of do that. And this creates a radical change in our mind. Or if I'm greedy, you know, like I remember I live in the community now, and you know, had a busy morning, and I've come home with a cake, and so I sit down, have a cup of tea and this cake, and then one of my friends comes in, you know, well, I could sit there and eat the cake, or I could cut it in half and share it. It's two different experiences, isn't it? Sharing creates a generous mind. So that's a little bit about sharing. Oh, we're doing all right. Time, we're good. Last one. So, yeah. Giving is enjoyable. So that's the title. Giving is enjoyable. Maybe challenging at times, but it's enjoyable. It creates friendship. Creates good feeling and positive emotion. Giving is pleasurable. Receiving is pleasurable. And seeing someone give is pleasurable. Seeing someone receive is pleasurable. So it creates a magical field of delight and positivity wherever generosity arises. It sort of also generates more giving, the example of giving. seeing someone being selfish is distasteful. Seeing someone being mean is grating. Seeing someone being greedy is unpleasant. So what sort of perfume do you want to leave in your wake as you go around the world? So seeing displays of generosity in many forms really perfumes the air. It warms hearts and inspires. Your example shines and makes a difference. Giving is enjoyable. So just going to summarise briefly. So just the 10 points really. So first of all, we're given to enormously. Then the thing about being aware of our inner riches and our lack of self-worth. It's not about material wealth. I think often we can feel generosity just about giving to a charity or something to do with money. As you saw, it's to do with huge amount of ways we are and loads of ways of giving. So, yeah, things that can be given, little things go a long way. Something to encourage, give something little every day. Feeling the needs of another. Receiving well, receiving generosity well. Practicing gratitude for being given to. Sharing and giving is enjoyable. There you go, guys. Thank you. Thank you. So, should we have quiet and then mantra, or
yeah?
Anybody's got a question of any sort?
How big was the cake you shared with your friend?
Well, it was just a Belgian bun with a cherry on top. I did cut the cherry in half as well. But
did
I didn't want to.
You didn't say whether you shared it or not.
Oh, did I not? I did share it.
And did you enjoy sharing it?
Eventually. There was resistance. You know, I sort of thought, oh, you know, I could feel the resistance. But I was really glad I did.
Yeah.
Sorry I didn't.
I was thinking in that moment, you could think, oh, I could have taken this to my room.
Yeah, I did think that.
When you live with people, you know, you're in community, so you think, oh, I didn't know they were going to come in, I didn't take this to my room.
Yeah, exactly. That all went through my mind. But actually, it's really nice to sit down with a friend and talk and have cake. And actually, half of that was plenty.
How about this giving and receiving? You started with one example of somebody who once upon a time wanted to talk to you and he left you
a draining energy
drained out. So where would generosity fall in that aspect?
You're giving to yourself.
You're giving yourself.
Yeah, and actually I think in that situation I was holding that person in a particular position. I don't think I was actually able, I was the best person to help them. And actually just for them to perpetuate the patterns that I've tried previously to help them see, but they weren't seeing. And I think my energy was, you know, it's a choice from my point of view, my energy was better given to other people or other activities. And we there is limited time and limited... it's limited, aren't we? Mm. So it is. We do have to make a choice. So in that thing, it's a difficult call, isn't it? But actually, I was so glad I did. At the moment I'm very stretched. You know, there's so many classes and stuff. So actually, I knew that if I perpetuated this, a lot of things would slip here and there, which are far more important. So it's choosing. And I think that comes from awareness and knowing yourself. I know I can, certain things really deplete me. You know, I've had a history of chronic fatigue, and I've been really well for years, and I'm staying well. and I know what can drain me. So it's wise choice.
So it's knowing what you're able to give.
Yeah, that's right. And often I've given in those places and suffered and then I haven't been able to do other things. I had to, you know, cancel or withdraw from other things, which isn't wise, actually. Mm. Or helpful or kind. Because we really, that's why metta is, the first stage of the metta is us, is you. Because if I don't look after myself, you know, I'll be too depleted and I won't be able to do what I enjoy doing and happy to do and feels the best thing in my life to be doing. Yeah. Mm. So, sorry, but no.
Yes.
And it felt the right thing. It wasn't easy, but it felt right.
I was quite... I love the imagery about how would one want to perfume their life, actually, in terms of the effect that you know, dana and generosity has. I tend to use... giving and dana has been a big part of my practice over the last year, and it's quite incredible the effect I found it's had on myself as much as others. But even times when I feel very enclosed, kind of tight or rigid, or you know, that whole distinction of self versus other kind of does come to fruition. I found when I have been able to let go of that and just give, or just let a situate, or you know, step back and kind of give support, it completely changes the whole, not just that moment, but my whole views that day, and it can last a few days, and it just immediately just transcends to, you know, the power, the transformative power of giving, I think is huge.
Yeah.
And also the fact it energises as well, I really pick up on that.
Yeah.
If you give your time to support a class or a meditation or be there for a friend, you can expect that to be tiring, but it doesn't, and it's quite mysterious.
It
is. It's really lovely.
Because often we go about with this view, we can't give too much because we'll lose out, or you know, we'll come out or something. But actually, it's totally the opposite. It's the topsy-turvies, isn't it? You know, we just see it's just the other way up. You know, I know if I go about, you know, happy and giving and kind and whatever, it's what the world that meets me. If I go around as a miserable old fart, then that's what will meet me. You know, it's sort of like, it is, isn't it? You know, and you know, some days it's harder than others to pull it out of the bag, but you know, it is totally down to me. That's the great thing about Buddhism. It's you have to take full responsibility for all your being, your actions, your mind, the lot. Nobody else is to blame, and we can do it. We've got all the qualities to do it. It's your choice. Wonderful, but it's a challenge.
Anna Priya.
Hello, lovely.
Would you tell us quickly about your first meeting you set up in Deal? It's all about your generosity. You put an advert.
All right, very swiftly.
Yeah.
So I'd been in Deal about a year and a half, having a rest actually after having been at the LBC for 10 years, and some lovely time. But then I sort of was missing Sangha. There was no Sangha there at all. And so I sort of... Well, it was actually one of my patients saying... because I was sort of thinking, what shall I do? I've either got to move to a Buddhist, you know, Buddhist centre or whatever. And she said, why not give a public talk? And I thought, oh, yeah, that's what I'll do. Give a public talk. And so I booked the best venue in town because I thought, well, give me a bit of Dutch courage. Royal Hotel on the seafront, darling. And... and we only had 40. We had 40 seats, and I thought, blimey, that's way, you know. And I put a few leaflets about and told a few friends. And the talk was called. Well, it had a Buddhist perspective at the top, and then the title was "It's Not Out There." And put them around, and then on the night, I had two friends who weren't Buddhists supporting me because there wasn't anybody else down there. And 78 people turned up, and. We stuffed them in there because there was only 40 seats, and quite a few people didn't get in. Actually, Jinaketu, who was ordained this year, came to that talk because his very first event, he couldn't get in. He actually put 5 in the dana bowl and left. There's generosity for you. And so, yeah, and then that's how the whole East Kent Deal Buddhist group things happened. So I thought, oh, I can stay here. So, yeah. So So let's have a quiet moment or two, and then I think we normally end with a chaplain and a manager, which I'll lead through twice, and then we can do for a bit. Just connecting with your experience of being in your body, your precious body. In the midst of your amazing life, breathing, Shakya Muni Swaha. Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Shakya Muni Swaha.
Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Shakya Muni Swaha.
Shakyamuni.